matter. It's got to be a proper basulo. If he says that, that's a different thing. Then he's making a stipulation. But we are speaking, yes, says Rashi, but there is no stipulation. Yes.
Isn't this then the first case we've seen where a woman is given a ketuvah of 200 when there's not a tina of ketuvah?
Where there isn't the sitting, yes.
Yeah, but this is the first case where this has come up.
No, we had it before when you weren't here.
Oh, pardon me.
Right. Minam esuin, a kegeun shenichnesro lechupa umes balo. Now, this is the second part of the Mishnah. How can she be an almona and a basulo from the nesuin? Kegeun, for example, says Rashi, shenichnesro lechupa, there was the chupa, and the husband died, and it's understood that there wasn't a bia. Nevertheless, kesubosa mona, her kesubi is mona in nisa isla achar, if she marries afterwards, stam, without any stipulations, kesubosa mona, her kesubi is a mona, the becheskes peulo kaimo mishenichnasa lechupa, because as soon as she goes under the chupa, she's got a chazoka of being a beulo. From here it would appear, Philip, that if she just goes under the chuppah already, then that is regarded as yichud. Once she goes under the chuppah, she's got that chazoka. So it would appear. But anyway, it's a point that, if a point were like to come up like that, we'd have to go into it. The angel in time is pursuing, angel chalaf sida osamona. But he can't say to her, yes?
I'm sorry, there's something that's very contradictory here.
Yes.
If this question of basula is some physical intact organ, then it would seem to me that it makes sense that this girl who was injured by a piece of wood...
Book
of
AIDS.
That makes sense to me, but yes. The other one doesn't.
Which is that?
The one who was married and her husband died before they had intercourse.
Yes.
But on the other hand, if it's not a physical thing, if it's rather some kind of a spiritual lack of basulin,
yes.
then the woman who was married and didn't have physical intercourse, that makes sense to me, but the other one doesn't.
That's right. Yes.
One is a physical thing, the other seems to be a more spiritual one.
Yes.
And I don't understand why, in these two really very dissimilar cases, they both end up in the same situation.
Yes. I don't want to speak too much because there's the next piece of Gemara. The next piece of Gemara which comes in elucidates just the machlokas a little bit better. And there are two possibilities in the machlokas. So I'd rather deal with it there, but I just want to bring in a third factor, George, and this is more an halachic factor. And that is, and the halacha very often works like that. We say, once a woman has, in erusin, we say, our society is such a society that where she is basula mina erusin, avona mina erusin, she is a basula. We take it that she's a basula. That is our society, and we take it like that. That is what the chazoka means. That is our society. And therefore she's got a chazoka. Once a girl is married, our society says, once she's married, she's lived with a man. Although we know it's not like that, but this is the way we work the chazoka. It's true, you are quite right, and we'll perhaps be able to get a slightly better idea of it as we go along. That's quite right. Mukas 8, according to Rabbi Meir, we've got no difficulty at all. She's had no physical relationship with a man. And therefore, Mukas Rabbi Meir says Mukas 8 is with Rabbonim, we've got a difficulty, right. And we're going to deal with that. That's going to come out. All right. So that is the. You've got to go. All right. That is the Gemara. Now, what I want to do with you it's a question I am very anxious that you should be able to reach a stage where you can work on the Gemara on your own. So before we go any further, what I want you to do is, I want to go over this Mishnah, but aloud, each one of us will say it aloud. No translation, just reading it, because we know already what it means. But as we read it, to know what it is that we are saying. If you say it, we all say it together. Hagodol Shebo
Al HaKadosh. Sometimes the Tulim and the Tulim, the same Mishnah?
The Tulim and sometimes a Yud and a Mem.
Sometimes the Nun, sometimes the Mem. A Mem. And the same Mishnah.
Yes. There's no reason for that at all. That is just that those, the Mem and the Nun in Mishnaic Hebrew interchange very, very easily. In fact, it should really be in Mishnaic Hebrew, the Tulim. But what one very often finds is when an expression is used like "Ein lo hen tainus pesulim," "Ein hen tainus pesulim." But yeah, you've got it in both of them. But there's no reason for it, and you could very, you could quite easily find that in some editions it would have a mem, or some editions would have a nun. That doesn't really right. Yeah, if we could. Give me your attention a little bit for the next piece of Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Rav Yehuda said that Rav said, Koton habo al hagedolo asoho mukas eitz. That if a cotton comes on a gedolo, he makes her a mukas eitz. So what Rav is really saying, that I've got to explain something else to you, that he is working on the basis of the Chachomim, not on Rabbi Meir. And the Chachomim say, a mukas eitz, her kesubah is how much?
Mona.
So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, koten abo ala gedolo asohu mukas eitz. If a koten comes on a gedolo, he makes her mukas eitz, and a kesuba is 100. Right?
Yeah.
Because he's going according to the Chachomim. Rav is going according to the Chachomim.
It seems the opposite of the way we learned.
Yes, of course. Of course it's the opposite. That's going to be the question of the Gemara. Of course it's not like the Mishnah. Says Rav Yehuda, Ki amrito kamedi Shmuel, when I said it before Shmuel, I said what Rav had said, and I said it to Shmuel. Omar Shmuel said, "Ein mukas eitz bebosor." He said, "A mukas eitz cannot be, a woman can't become a mukas eitz through a bio with a boy less than 9 years of age. It can't be." So therefore, says Shmuel, that koton habo alagdolo is not like mukas eitz, and the kesuba would be 200. That is the machlokas. David, have you got it? He says the Gemara. Now the next piece of Gemara is really just in parentheses. Iko de masni lo lehoshmaito. There are those who learn. Iko there are de who masni learn. There are those who learn law. It, Lahosh Maita, that is this statement, the Api Nafsho independently. That means that it's not Rav Yehuda is saying it, but it's a straight machlokas between Rav. It's not that Rav said it and he said it Bishmur, that not Rav Yehuda said it in Bishmur, but straight. Koten abo ala gedolo, if a koten comes on a gedolo, Rav Omer aso mukas eitz, Rav says that she becomes a mukas eitz, and it's according to the Chachomim, therefore she kesubi is 100, Ushmuel Omer ein mukas eitz bebosor, and Shmuel says that a mukas eitz can't be through the flesh, and therefore her kesubi is 100 is 200. Right?
A young man, a boy,
he can't make a Ramukas 8. He can't break with a ceiling. If a coffin comes on a grown up woman and she's a basula, that doesn't make her, doesn't do anything.
It doesn't mean that it couldn't count as Mukat Eitz, it would count as a Bia if he would do it, because it's different than a
non. No, no, it's nothing, it's not. She remains a Basula. If she was a Basula before the Bia, she remains a Basula afterwards. Mosiv Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia asks a question, and he asks it from our Mishnah. It says, Godol Shebo ala Katona, Tano. If a Godol comes on a Katana, the cotton abo ala gadola, and a cotton who comes on a gadola, umukas eitz, and a mukas eitz, kesubosan mosaim divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that a kesuba is 200. The chachomim omrim, and chachomim say, mukas eitz kesubosan mono. And the chachomim say that a kesuba is a mono. So Rav goes like neither of them. Rav says that, Rav says, a koten abo ala gedola makes it a mukas eight. The chachomim say that she gets a mukas eight kesubosomono. But Rav says that a koten abo ala gedola would also only get 100. But we haven't got a law like that. The way we learn our Mishnah, even the Chachomim say that a Kotan Abo Ala Gedola, she gets 200. Is that clear? I'll go through it again in a moment. Omar Rava said, Rava Hochika Omar. This is what it means to say. Godel Habo Ala Ketano Velo Klum. If a Godel comes on a Katana, now it's explaining the Mishnah. If a grown-up person comes on a girl who is less than 3 years old, below clue, there's nothing. The pochus become, because if she's less than this, that is less than 3 years old, can no saying etzba bo'ayin domi. It's like poking a finger into the eye. It begins to tear. And then the eye recovers and the tears return. And if you poke it in again, the tears will come out again. So that is clear. There's no machlokas about that at all. Now we come to the second point in the ratio. The cotton abo ala gedolo, and if a cotton comes on a gedolo, asoho mukas eitz. He makes her a mukas eitz. Umukas eitz gufa plukte the Rabbi Meir the Rabbonan, and mukas eitz itself is there the difference of opinion between the Meir and the Rabbonan. So all that Rav says is that if a koten abo ala gedola, he says it's the same as mukas eitz. So in the case if it's Rabbi Meir, then the kesuba would be 200. And if it's the Rabbonan, the Kotan Abo Ala Bukas Ala Akatan, the Kotan Abo Ala Gdolo would also be 100. That is how the Gemara learns.
I have a very serious problem with that.
Just one minute, before you've got a problem, Philip's got a problem, had a problem before you. What's the problem, Phil? Philip, how are you getting on here?
I have a question.
All right.
When we say the Katan Boa the Gedola,
yes.
Does that mean that there's no more Basula?
If a Katan Boa the Gedola, that's an interesting thing.
You said that he doesn't pierce.
He doesn't break the Basula. That is, Shmuel says, he says it's impossible.
Is there a Mechloket about that or not?
It doesn't seem so. At the moment, it doesn't seem so. But Rav says, nevertheless, she is considered to be a Be'ulo, and Shmuel says, no, he says, it's impossible for this to happen. It's whether, we aren't there yet whether we can say, that's the toastus there, we aren't yet there whether we can say that the machlokus is in the metzias. So metzias means what are the facts? Can a child of less than 9 years old break the basurim, or can't he break the basurim? Is it a question of, is that the question? Or do we say, no, he can't break the basurim, that's understood. There's no question about that. The question is, does the association make her that she gets 100, or makes her a ba'ur, or then she still has basurim, or not? That is the whole question. So I would rather take it as that for the moment. Yes, down here, what was the question down here? There was a question.
Yes. How can Rav come along and say, in the case where a katan comes on the gedola, in that case she's a muchas eitz, how can he do that in the face of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah lists a muchas eitz in a different category?
That is the question that the Gemara asks. And Rav answers that question.
How?
He says, this is what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah goes, Agodol Shibor Laktano, that we know exactly what that is.
Right.
But Korten Shibor Ala Gadola Umukas Eitz, and Korten Shibor Ala Gadola Umukas Eitz go together.
So he's saying that this is one form of a Mukas Eitz?
He says that these are two things that have got the same din. And the Chachomim say that the Kesuvah is mono for both of them.
No, there's a different thing here. In other words, I can say that the penalty for this, if you run a traffic light and if you park in the red, we're going to charge you the same thing. The din is the same.
Yes.
The din is the same. But they're still very different things.
Yes.
It sounds like Rav is saying...
No, they're two different things. Of course they're different things.
No, but it sounds like Rav is saying that if this katan comes on a gedola, she is a mukas eitz. Not that she's treated similarly, but that she is a mukas eitz.
She's got the din of a mukas eitz, and the kesuvah is 200. But you see, I'm never going to that. Look, the Gemara is going to discuss afterwards. The Gemara is going to make distinctions, obvious distinctions. The Gemara is going to say, but after all, in the case of Korten Aboa la gedolo, there's been a carnal relationship. In the case of Mukas Eitz, there's been no relationship. No carnal relationship. And then the Gemara is going to reverse it. You see, you always make me say things that I want to say. Then the Gemara is going to reverse it. And is going to say, in the case of Mukas Eitz, there was a rupture of the Basuri. But in the case of Korten Aboa la gedola, there wasn't a rupture of the Basuri. But those are things that will come afterwards. First of all, we just have to get the mechanics of it right. And that is the as far as we go. Just one moment, Philip.
Well, I think you clarified somewhat. If then in the Mishnah, when it talks about a katan coming on a gedola,
yes,
that's one case. And then, isn't that the other case of Mukas Eitz? Rather than reading it that the Akatan comes upon a gedola and she's also Mukas Eitz. That's not
the case. No. So oh, no. There are two different cases, right?
It seems that you have a Akatan coming on the gedola. He doesn't penetrate, so she stools the kula. But she goes down a peg in her status. In other words, instead of 200, she's at 100.
Rather, according to the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Meir, not. She remains with 200, yes.
For some reason, I'm going back to, who were those people a long time ago, maybe last year, who were the experts who could have a via without breaking.
The Babylonians, yes.
Yes.
How is it? It's not connected, but would there be the same kind of argument between the two schools?
Well, you'd be able to work it out from dating. You don't know yet enough about
right,
the tomorrow.
But
you'd be able to work this out. Yes, that's true. Yes, you'd be able to work it out. Yes, Philip?
Did Rav Hoshea add something here? It seems to me that what he said is exactly what we read in the Mishnah.
Rav Oshie asks the question. Robo answers it. Rav Oshie quotes the Mishnah. He quotes the Mishnah. He says, look here, but this can't square with the Mishnah.
Okay.
So Robo says, you've got to understand the Mishnah.
Oh, okay.
That is the way he says, that's the way Rav learns the Mishnah.
Asks.
Now that is, I wanted to take this more further. I'm not taking it any further because I've got to get you down to Chavruso. If you just look at the Rashi, I saw her mukas eitz. He makes her mukas eitz. That is a cotton habo alagdolo. Says Rashi, nehi de ein bio so bio. It is true that his bio is not a bio. Mihu, nevertheless, logora, he isn't, it's not worse. Ma'eitza nitka. Than a piece of wood that pierced. Ulerabonan de pligia mukas eitz kesubosa mono. And this is Rabbi's going according to the Rabbonon, who differ and who say that a mukas eitz kesubi is a mono. Because according to Rabbi Meir, it doesn't make any difference. Vechein de inyan kohen godol bisnan. Lo yiso es mukas eitz. He said the same law would apply to a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a mukas eitz. But she's had no relationship with any man, because it says, Isho bi besuleo hikoch. He shall take a woman with her besuling. So a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a mukas eitz. So Rashi says the same would apply to a kotna boala gedolo that a Kohen Gadol can't marry her. An ordinary Kohen can, but a Kohen Gadol can't marry her.
Isn't that partly addressed the question Saul asked, I don't know, a few months back about whether Kohen Gadol could marry a diaret who converts less than Rosh Hashanah Yomecha?
I don't really, you asked that question.
A long time ago.
Good question.
And I think the rabbi said it was a machlokas, right?
Yes, but that could be, that could go. That could still go, because she's got her basili.
So she, a Kohen Gadol?
Well, I can't give you an answer for that. I can't give you an answer for that, but the possibility is, yeah. Just Ein Mukas Es Bevosor Odom. Shmuel says, Ein mukas eitz bebosor odom. The Iba ula lo havia mukas eitz nami leso. And he says that if she isn't a beula, she can't be a mukas eitz. There are those who learn it ba'amfi nafsho, below gavri, without appending the name of Rav Yehuda. Velo oma Rav Yehuda mishmei de Rav, umishmei de Shmuel. It wasn't Rav Yehuda who said it in the name of Rav and in the name of Shmuel. Elo'inu gufayu iflubbo, but they themselves directly, in direct confrontation, differ on this particular matter. That is as far as we have got to go. Please, will you divide yourselves into chavrusas and go over, what's the question?
I don't understand what's
gufayu, they themselves. They themselves.
Right.
Gufayim, their bodies, they themselves. That is Rav and Shmuel. It's not that Rav Yehuda said it, that Rav and Shmuel. But Rav and Shmuel directly have this difference of opinion between them.
Right.
Now,
and this term, the Api Nafsho
means independently. Independently. But Api means with a face, Nafsho on its own. It's an expression.
Nafsho.
With a face of its own. They said it ba'api nafsho. With a face of its own. Not with somebody else's face. Not with Rabbi Yehuda's face. But with their own face. Rav and Shmuel said it. It's an expression. It's an idiomatic expression. David, how are you getting on to this evening? Alright. Please, gentlemen, go over this. There isn't so much time, but the Mishnah with the Rashi and the Gemara and that little bit of Rashi, I'm here to ask you. I was inclined not to ask to answer those questions, and you made it very clear to me that this was most important to you, that it made all the difference, and I can understand it, that Ashkofa is something that is very important. You want to know the spirit of it and the background of it, and I can understand it. And nevertheless, we've got to, it's most important for you to do Chavrusa. That is most important, because that is the way you are going to learn how to learn. Now, 35 minutes is not sufficient. I had planned to give you a good bit more than 35 minutes. I had planned to give you just under an hour. Just under an hour. And I would have divided the actual shir and the chavrusa into equal parts. Now, if you would like to go on with the chavrusa, then you may go on with the chavrusa. The only thing it means that I can't give you the other matters. Which would you rather have?
The other things.
Rule of both. Impossible.
Dr. Fleisch, you also feel that way? Or would you rather go? Or would you rather do go on doing the chavrusa?
No, I'd rather hear you answer the question.
Well, it's not the question, I'm dealing with another subject.
No, that's right.
All right. That's the way we are going.
I think, may I make a recommendation?
Yes.
In the future, perhaps, we might limit questions during the initial presentation of Mishnah Gemara.
Absolutely right.
And people should bring pads to write questions as
fine,
we go.
Fine. That the questions have to come to the latter part. That's all right. Can somebody bring the Chumash Bereishis, please? I want to go through something with you, and the reason I'm doing it is a many facet. There are many reasons why I'm doing it. I want to show you how one does a piece of Chumash, and one does a piece of Rashi. I want to show you how you can draw certain conclusions. But the main thing I want to give to you is the message that is contained in it all. In this week's sefer, we read the story of how Avraham Avinu takes his servant Eliezer and sends him to find a wife for his son Rivka. And this is how it starts. This is what he says. Vayomer Avraham el Avdo Zekan Beiso. And Avraham says to his servant, the elder of his household. Avraham, yes? What?
I think the Rebbe said Avraham. We said
Avraham.
I'm sorry.
And Avraham said to his servant, his eved, that is Eliezer, Zekan Beiso. The elder of his household. So, Zekan Beiso, the elder of his household, he doesn't mean to say that he's older than Avraham, but Zekan Beiso, this is a title that he's given him. He's the elder of his household. That means he plays a very important part in the whole household of Avraham Avinu. And the household of Rom Avinu is his immovable property. It's his movable property. It's a big organization already. Then he says, HaMosheil B'chol Asher Lo, who rules over everything that is his. He rules over everything that belongs to Avraham Avinu. Who rules over it? This Eved, Eliezer. Now, you can imagine to what extent Avraham trusts him and how trustworthy this man is. He is the Zakan Beiso, he's the elder of his household, and HaMoshe B'chol Asher Lo, he rules over everything that is his. That means that he signs the checks. That it's ever the Eved signs the checks. He does the inventory, is what you call it here?
Mm-hmm.
I call it inventory, here you call it. The inventory, he does the inventory, he signs the checks, he rules over everything. So Avraham calls him now and he says, Sim no yodachot tachas yireichi. Put now your hand under my thigh. The Ashbiacho, and I will make you swear by Hashem Elokei Hashemayim, by the Lord, the God of heaven, Velokei Oretz, and the God of earth. Asher lo sikach isho livnibi benosa knani asher onuchi yoshev v'kidbet. Under no circumstances are you take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose midst I dwell. Now when he says, Sim no yodecho tachas yereichi, put your hand under my thigh, that is the severest form of oath you can take. The equivalent of it today is an oath that is taken with a Sefer Torah in his hand. Where the man who takes the oath takes a Sefer Torah in his hand and he makes the oath. It's the severest form of oath. So he says, I will make you swear you are not to take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanite in whose midst I dwell. Ki el arti ve'el molaveti teleich. But you shall go to my land and to my birthplace and v'lokachto ishol ibni liyitzchok. And you shall take a wife for my son for Yitzchok. Frech sachakasha. Right, the very first thing that you've got to ask. He trusts him with everything that he's got. So he's got to make him take an oath. Put your hand under my thigh. The severest form of oath. That you will not take a daughter, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, you'll go back to my country. He trusts him so much, isn't it enough if he tells him? Isn't it enough if he gets his word? So you can see what it means to Avraham Avinu. What a wife means. If you've got one, treasure her. If you haven't got one, see to it that you get one. And see that you get the right one. But how important it was to him. Shlomo HaMelech says, Chach mos noshim bon soveso. The wise ones among women, they are the ones who build the house. Man's got to help. Everything goes well. He's got a good relationship with his wife. Children, wonderful relationship with the children. Everything is going well. It's a pleasure to come into the home. Guests come in. Everything else. Chachmos noshim bonzo beso. It's the wise ones amongst the women who build her home. It's a woman who does that. And if she is a foolish woman, with her very hand she breaks it all down. Foolish woman, she breaks it down. Foolish woman doesn't build a house, she breaks it. Avraham Avinu knows that. If Shlomo HaMelech knows it, Avraham Avinu knows it. The only difference is he knows it even better than Shlomo HaMelech knows it. Here it's not only a question of getting a wife for his son. There is a question of getting away from his son, on whom the whole Am Yisrael is going to depend. From whom is it going to be built? It's going to be built from Yitzchok and from his wife, whoever she's going to be. It's so important to him that whereas he's prepared to entrust all his worldly possessions into the hand of his servant, of Eliezer, of his slave Eliezer, everything, touching completely, when it comes to this question, there he's got to swear. This is too important. And the severest oath of all. But it doesn't end there.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, doesn't end there. Vayomer Elovo Eved, and the slave says to him, Ulai lo sovi o isho lo leches acharai elo oretz hazos. What will happen if the young lady, after all, she's also got a personality, she's also got a mind of her own. What will happen? She says, I don't want to go after you to a strange land. I don't know where you're going to take me. Should I take your son to the land from which you left out? It can happen. Says, Vayomer Elov Avraham. Says Avraham to him, Ishom Elocho. You watch out, Pentu Shivis Benishomo. That under no circumstances do you take my son back there. Adonai Elohei HaShomayim, the Lord, the God of the heavens, Asher Lekochani mi Beis Ovi, who took me from the house of my father, me Eretz Moladti, from my birthland. Va'asher Diber li va'asher Nishbali Lemor, who spoke to me and who swore to me, saying, the Zarachoy Tenis Oretz Azos, I give this land to your seed. Who Yishlach Malachol Lefonecho? He will send his Malach before you. He will send his angel before you. V'lokach to Ishul Mishom. And you will take a woman for my son there. There's only one thing that somehow doesn't square here. When he tells him, he makes him swear. He says, and I'll make you swear by Hashem, by the Lord. Elokei HaShomayim v'Elokei HaOretz, the God of the heaven and the God of earth. Don't you take a wife for my son from the daughters of Canaan. He speaks about the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth. When Eliezer says, if the woman won't come, should I bring your son there? He says, oh no, don't go there. I've got every confidence that it won't happen, that she won't, will follow you. How do I know? Because Hashem will send his angel for you. Now he cries, he describes Hashem. Hashem, the Lord. Elokei HaShomayim, the God of the heavens, Hashem, Elokechani mi Beis Ovi, you took me out from my father's home, and from my birthplace. What is different? He doesn't say Oretz. That question Rashi asks. Says Rashi. Of course not. Says Rashi. When he makes him swear, where are they? In Canaan. Avraham Avinu is living there in a society, in a community. He's a very small community that accept that it is the God of the earth. He's speaking to them, he knows. But when he said, from where Hashem took me, they didn't accept that. They didn't believe in that. So therefore he said, when he's speaking from where Hashem took me, he says, this is the Lord, the God of the heavens. Now, but when he is, it's the God of the earth. Now just look what happens here. So it works out like this. He is living in a place, then, where there is already emunah, he's already planted faith. He comes from a place where there wasn't Elokei HaOretz, where there wasn't any belief in any faith. So he tells his servant, nobody from here From where must you take? Go to a place from where I come, where there is no belief and where there is no faith. From there take a wife for my son, not from here. From people who don't accept Elokei HaOretz. How can that be? How can that be? I mean, that's what it amounts to. Not only that, Lavan and Besuel are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They are idol worshippers. He says, you go to them. And who knows whether Rivka might also be an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. It's possible that she's also an idol worshipper. Also an idol worshipper. So which is more important? He's got to get a woman. And this is going to be the woman that's going to build the Am Yisrael. Very difficult to understand. Here we come back again to our old principle. Back again to our old principle. If one has Yirah Shamayim, but one has no Midos, and on the other hand, one has Midos, but no Yirah Shamayim. Which is better?
Midos.
So it works out, even if that person is an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But character is good. Midos. So when it comes to Rivka, what does he want from her? And he says, what does he find there? He finds three things. He finds Gemilas Chesed. He finds Derech Eretz, the way she speaks to him. She says, please, thank you, will you? Derech Eretz. We find Zrizus. So we find Zrizus, assiduity. How quickly she does it all. She runs and she does it all quickly. That's a Mido. Afterwards, that's Midos. That's afterwards. That's Midos. But we find that she's got Derech Eretz. We find that she's got the Midos Chesed. She's got Zrizus. And she's got Zrizus. Those are the three qualities. Those are, and he prays to Hashem that if he should find these qualities, that's what he wants. Those are the three qualities. It doesn't matter whether she's an Ovdei Avodah Zarah, but that is the thing. The whole thing is she's got Midos, she's got character. So, just that is one thing. I'll show you another thing. You know, we are living in a secular world that works differently. You know, it doesn't matter how you play the game, it's whether you win or you lose. It's a secular world. That is one thing. That isn't my main concern. My main concern is the terrible world in which we live. We live in a secular world which really thinks, do you use the word in California, cock-eyed?
Yes.
Does it mean the same thing?
Yeah.
That you, California thinks cock-eyed. It doesn't matter. It's not important how you play the game. It's whether you win or lose. It's cock-eyed thinking. But I'm concerned that in the Torah world you can get cock-eyed thinking. You can get the thinking that as long as the person takes Chol of Yisroel and eats glut kosher meat, and the tzitzis are out, that's all that is needed. All that is needed. Derech Eretz, Midos, that's fine. What's that for? It's cock-eyed thinking. It's crooked. It's just not straight. I'll show you something else. Zochel eis asher oso lecho Amalek b'derech b'tzeis chemi Mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you when you went out from Egypt. The din is Tinche es zecher Amalek mitachas hashemayim. You shall wipe out the memory of Amalek from under the heavens. Lo tishkoch. Don't forget. Wipe him out. That's a terrible thing to say. In the time of Shmuel, Shaul lost his position because he didn't obey that. Wipe them out. What happens if an Amalek, he wants to become a Jew?
My understanding is he's allowed to convert.
To convert. He wants to become a Jew to convert. The Rambam speaks about those that you can't accept, even you can accept. Yes?
Don't we have to kill him first before
we I thought you were going to ask the other question. As a lawyer, you would advise him to convert first and then afterwards let them do it. So if he comes and you are satisfied that he wants to be a Jew, you accept him. Look, a Moabite. A Moabite? Him, you kill him now, but if he wants to become a Jew, under no circumstances. What's the trouble? They didn't come out to give us water when we went. Well, alright, so they weren't so nice to us. Is that the only thing, that they weren't so nice to us, that they didn't show? They didn't show They didn't show Gemilus Chesed. Besides that they didn't show Gemilus Chesed, there was something else that they
hired Bilam.
Hired Bilam is another thing. But much more serious.
Where they came from?
From where are the Moabites descended? From whom?
Both daughters of ours.
And from whom? And who's the father? Who's the patriarch?
The incest isn't
so important. Because they did it in the Shem Shemayim. Lot, they were descended from Lot. To whom does Lot owe his life?
To Avram.
So, hadn't it been for Avram, they wouldn't have been alive. Hadn't it been for the Jews, they wouldn't have been alive. So where's that Korah Satev? Where's that Korah Satev? That is Ashkosa. That is depravity. If the children are going through, help them, that is a depravity. For them there is no chance whatsoever. Nothing. He wants to become a Jew. He can't become a Jew, he can't be accepted. Yes?
I'm sure this is a good question. But
you should, is a good question.
I don't remember the Pasuk in Lashon HaKodesh and Kadoshim, but the question about not holding a grudge is,
yes,
you do something for someone. And then, you go to someone and you ask them for a particular item and they say no, and then they come to you, you're obliged to help them even though they didn't help you.
Yes.
Is there any, that Indian at all, why here? In other words, the fact that the descendants of Moab did not treat the Israel correctly. Does that justify? Apparently it does, but how can we reconcile?
You can ask a better question than that. You can ask the question, how did Avram's chesed knows no bounds? It knows no bounds. Nevertheless, it tells us tells us as follows. The ninth Nisoyim that Avraham Avinu had to bear was the greatest nisoyin of all. That was the greatest test of all. Do you know what that test was? Are we pardoned?
Right?
No, that's the tenth.
Was it the tenth of B'nai Chet?
No.
That was not.
No. The one, no.
Was that the Satan when Satan was testing?
No. That was all the Akedah. That was all the Akedah.
You had to go get what?
No, the ninth one was when Soro said to him, Yesora said to him, but Koresho Omazes, drive out Hogo, the Espino and her son. And then, Vayera Hadover Ma'od Bene Avraham, and the matter was evil in the eyes of Avraham. But it says Ma'od, Vayera Hadover Ma'od Bene Avraham, the matter was very evil in the eyes of Rabbi Allah Despina on the matter of his son. That was his, they say, Chazal say that was the greatest test of all, the ninth test. Vayomer Elohim el Avraham, and Hashem said to Avraham, Al geira vayenecha al anar v'al amosecho. Don't let it be evil in your eyes about the young man and about the Kol asher tomar elecho Sora shema b'kolo. Everything that Sora tells you, listen to her. Why? Because he was a metzachek. Yishmael was a metzachek. What was a metzachek?
Did Ramban say that he was in also sexual perversions?
He made light of it. He made light of it.
Of what?
Of living with women, of being loose with women. He made light of it. Yitzchok is beginning to grow up. He says, you come with me. He says, I'll ask my father. He says, please, don't ask your father. I'll show you what it is to have a good time. You see, but it's against the Torah. So, you see, you're not going to. You have a good time when you're against the Torah. What's a man meant for? So Mitzachek, he made light of it. I happened to pass my neighbor's house this morning when I was going to shul, and the newspaper had been delivered there and was lying on the ground. And I saw there that a certain man had killed a girl. And he came to the school where the girl was and brought them, the students at the school brought them to the place where he had killed the girl to show them the body. Brought them to come and look at the body. I'm not going to say it again. So, better than I say it once. It's nothing, he laughs at it. That is what Yishmael was doing. So, Soro says, Goresh, drive her out. This was a terrible thing in the eyes of Rome. It was his greatest test. Hashem says to him, Al Yeda Benecha Alana, let it not be evil in your eyes about the child or about his mother. It could have stopped there. He could have said, Shema, Shema Bekol Soro. It says, Kol Asher Tomar Elecho Soro. Everything that Soro tells you, Shema Bekolo. Listen to her. Everything, says Avraham Avinu, Hashem says, I mustn't send her away. I must drive her away. It says, Goresh. Not send her away. I must drive her away. That's what it means. What's the difference between sending and driving away? Now just look what happens. So he gets up early in the morning and he takes bread. That's all it says. He doesn't say he took steaky koros. He just took bread. How much could there have been? The chemas maim and a flask of water. And he gives it to Hogar. He puts it on his shoulder. and he sends her, and she goes, and she wanders in the wilderness of Beer Sheva. Couldn't he have given her a guide? Couldn't he have given her somebody to go with her? That would have been sending, that wouldn't have been driving her.
He given her an animal to ride on.
That would have been sending, that wouldn't have been driving her. So when it comes to a question of Ra, what is Ra? No compromises whatsoever. No compromises. If it's Ra, if it is evil, but to what extent? Avram didn't decide that it was evil. Hashem said so. But then it must be in such a way that there's no attachment to it. Now imagine a man's trying to break it with a girl, but he takes her out to the cinema, to the pictures every other night. And when he brings her home, he kisses her goodnight. But he's trying to break it with her. What kind of a breaking is that? If he would have given her, sent her away nicely and everything, would have still been an attachment. There must be no attachment whatsoever. This has got to be broken. With the Amalekites, it's an interesting thing. There the reason is, it says in the Torah what the reason is with the Amalekites. It says the reason is, V'lo yorei Elohim, he didn't fear God. He attacked you from behind, he didn't fear God. What is it that he didn't fear God? The worst type of Aveiro is when you've got, you can see clearly what the position is, and then you go against it. The Am Yisrael had just gone through the Dead Sea. The Red Sea. Just gone through such a mess. Amalek knows about it. In spite of that, he still attacks her. Doesn't make any impression. That's a complete absence of Yiras Elohim. You know, we've got Emuno, which means belief. And then it goes to faith. And then it comes to Bitochen, which is trust. You can have Emuno, and you don't have any Bitochen, you don't have any trust. You've got belief. You haven't got faith, but you've got belief. You can have faith, belief, and you can have faith, and you can have trust, but no hero. Not afraid of Hashem. And there are two types of fear. The one is a higher type of fear, which is Rolamus Hashem, the majesty of Hashem. Cool. We just fade into insignificance. That type of fear. And then there is a lower type of fear, and that is you're afraid. You're responsible for everything you do. Afraid of Hashem. You can't have the higher type without having the lower type. There was a complete absence of this in the case of the Amalekites. In the case of us, we've got some kind of an excuse. You know, we don't see it. But there, look what the Egyptians got and look what they did. Leaves no impression. He's got no Yiras Elohim in him at all. If he's got no Yiras Elohim in at all, wipe out. But if he wants to become a Jew, he can become a Jew. There's still hope. There is hope that he can become a Yoreh. But with a Moabite, if he is a Yoreh Elohim, it doesn't last. There's no substance to it. He's got no midos, there is no substance to it. That is a Torah view. That's a Torah view. And there's just no question about it. It's not that it's debatable, it's not that it's negotiable. That is the Torah view. And this is apropos of the point that Professor Yata made about Hillel Beis Shammai, Beishimei, they put Beishamai first. Know what that means? How they play the game. That is the important thing. That's where they win. That's where they score. There are a few further things I want to say to you, but I'll just say as much as there is time to say. I spoke to you last time about spirituality and about materialism. And I explained to you that whatever there is in the material, in the world of materialism, there is in the world of spirituality. That in the world of spirituality, it's even more so. There is pollution in the world of materialism. Pollution in the world of spirituality too. There's no question that we've been affected by it. If one is affected physically with pollution, you can be quite sure, as I explained to you 2 weeks ago, you were here earlier at that time. As I explained to you 2 weeks ago, then in the case of a spiritual degree, it's much worse. Much worse. Infinitely much worse. It's a very interesting thing. The question of reversibility. If there's been a physical pollution, can one reverse the process? Can one reverse the process? Person's got cancer. One can arrest it. Can one reverse the process and then the lung that is cancerous now becomes non-cancerous? Can one do it?
Some cases.
It becomes non-cancerous. No marks left. Nothing at all. Cleanses it all out.
Not with one cancer, but a couple of other cancers.
It's a big thing. Whatever there is in the material world is in the spiritual world only more so. What we do know is that the study of the Torah reverses the effect of the pollution. That we do. Studying the Torah, seeing to understand it, studying it with a view to understanding it, with a view to translating it into practice, getting into the whole spirit of the Torah, that reverses the process. That is the chance that we've got. That is the cleansing process that we have got. One day I will speak to you more about it. One day I'll speak to you more about it. What it means even to have a Sefer Torah that is written by a Sofer, by a scribe that is a Yoreh Shamayim, that every letter he writes with Kavona. And I'm called to the Torah and I make a brocha over it. And I read up each letter there. I read it together with the person who reads it. What effect that has on a person. And that is why we are so particular about a Sefer Torah. And any learning has got that cleansing effect. I don't know whether you experience it at all. I'm hoping that we will get to that stage where you will experience. You've gone through such a piece of Kabbalah. You've learned it with Chavrus and you understand it. We've discussed the spirit of it. The spiritual implications of it, which is the Musaf of it. I'm hoping you'll come to that stage where you will feel the cleansing effect of it. Something like that. We in us, so thank you about being in the world of the Torah. I remember when I felt that for the first time. And what a difference it made to me. Gentlemen, that's the end of the shiur. There's only one further matter, and that is next week is Thanksgiving Shabbos. Thanksgiving weekend.
Mm. So, you know, it comes from
Hodu.
Sukkot, actually.
From Sukkot, yes, I know.
Connections.
Yes, yeah. I had difficulties in deciding whether I should have a shiur. I'm going to disappoint you. I've decided not to have a shiur. I've decided that those who are married should spend it with their wife and their family. Those who are not married should do everything devoted to introspection. And please bear this verse in mind. It is Mishlei chapter 14. And it's easy to find because I think it's the first verse in chapter 14. And it says, Chachmos Noshim, the wise ones amongst the women, that is born Soveso. It is she who builds the house, the Ivelet Biyodeot Yerseno, and a foolish woman with her very hands she destroys it. Chachmos Noshim, born Soveso. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're talking about a sixth quarter. There's this little short story that Dan Noam wrote once about her feeling that
the chairs
was poor. Why did it compare poor? Why did it compare this and make his money? Because not from right feeling and not from right. Because he says nobody ever, he's heard of a chuppah not being set up because of a dispute over money. Never has he heard of a man who didn't divorce his wife because of the chuppah affair for the gift. And this, when somebody would come to him to ask him, write me a gift, he would go back to, he says, no, I'll come back to your house and I'll make you come by. And this was, and the whole story built on this, what happened was about the influence on his life of a pair of Tfilin that were written by this so fair.
It's called Healthy Beach Day. And we were there, two other friends of mine, and we were there. When could it have been? We were actually in Viborg for Tisha B'Av of that year. So we were there in the height of summer. And we came, we arrived in Helsingfors that day, and then we put our things down in the hotel. I still remember the name of the hotel swore me. And we went down to the lobby and asked, where do we go? Where's the shul? They told us where the shul was. We took a slow walk to shul. And we came to shul, it was still closed, we waited a bit and opened, we went in, and no sooner had we been in than the gentleman came, his name was Mr. Kozanovsky. He came up to us, he just asked the names, and of course he connected names already, and he said, immediately after shul, you're coming to my home. And he collected us after shul, and he brought us to his home, and there he prepared a dinner for us, and gave us coffee as I've never tasted before. I developed a taste for coffee there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there, we thought we've got to go home. No, he won't think of letting us home, and he discussed Gomorrah and all sorts of things with us. Anyway, about 1 o'clock in the morning, he said, now I'll show you the sights of Helsingfors. This is the only time to see Helsingfors. I thought it middle of the night, see everything for me. Anyway, we went out, he opened the door, and I was blinded. Raw daylight. So far north, you see the sun. It was broad daylight. But inside it was dark. inside the lights were. Said Mr. Kozanowski, why did you put the lights on this? And all shut it out. He said, yes. He said, we can't take it. We've got to have the darkness. Otherwise our nerves are shattered. You've got to have this darkness. So, Hashem created it like that. That your nerves, of course, it needs darkness. But he created the nerves in order that the nerves should have darkness. So a person welcomes the darkness, he needs the darkness. And once you have the darkness, you have infinite lilo, elolagirso. Night has been created for them. It is very, everybody is required to live. That is the time that is best up for them. All comes with the Hamari got of it, but the essence of it is that the is Mashani Ibrahim, Hashem changes it in moments wise, and Mariva Robim, he brings on not the night, it's the Arovim, it's this period that he brings on, the period of dusk, it is for that for which we place the Rabbanish land on. Not plunged into sudden darkness, get accustomed to it and that. The Am Yisrael reached great heights. The one with, was with, for three periods. The one was at Har Sinai. The second time was in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech, he was a great king. And he was, and the third one was in the time of Ezra. Those were the three great periods. And in the time of Chizkiyahu, it was touch and go, that Mashiach comes, the time of Ezra, it was touch and go. So those were the three great periods. And in the time of Ezra, that was time again, we could go back to the original Kesav. And then we went back to the original Kesav. And in the time of Ezra, why is it exactly the time of Ezra? What was the sin of the golden calf? It was a Avodah Zorah. During the time of the Shoftim, there was a Avodah Zorah. During the time of the kings, there was a Avodah Zorah. During the time of the Nabim, there was a Avodah Zorah. With the destruction of the first base of Migdash and the going back, that was finished. No more Avodah Zorah. Since then, no Avodah Zorah. So, we could go back to it.
So we have the same...
exactly the same
as was given
on Har Sinai.
And between that time, were the Torahs written with the same ksav?
No.
The Torahs were written with a different ksav.
Different ksav, yes. It was written with a different ksav. That the Maharal speaks about. About this Rashi, you know, it's so simple. This is the way we treat these things. This is the way we treat it. This is the way we treat it. You want to bring me where it's written in black and white? You know,
I'm satisfied. I don't think my friend is. That's the problem.
Well, you know, George, I call you George.
Sure.
I just want to tell you about people not being satisfied.
Maybe I should tell people the original question. So,
yes, tell them, by all means, tell them, George. I just want to make a note. Thank you. I'll now take it.
I was showing somebody a page of Gemara and explaining why there were different typefaces, and said something about the Rashi being in a different typeface because he didn't want to use the holy letters. And she then went back to her instructor at Hebrew Union College, who insisted that the different letters were because they had to get a certain amount of type on one page, and in order to do that, Rashi had to be done in a more compact typeface. That was the this is the accepted explanation at Hebrew Union College.
This is the same typeface as the Gemara.
I know. Well, right. So
that's great. You know, I've got some oceanfront property in Nevada I've been trying to sell.
Right. So the problem was to get some typewritten explanation for her where it's in a book somewhere, some authoritative place, why Rashi wrote the way he did. That was the question I posed to
her. Don't the Sephardim in general simply write that way?
Pardon?
Don't the Sephardim in general simply write in that kitab all the time?
Philip, what does it mean, simply write? What do those words mean?
For lettered, whenever they write in Hebrew, it's my understanding that this is the script of Sephardim. I've seen Sephardim family, so this is...
Sephardim. No, it's not quite that script. It's not quite that. The Rashi script, not at all. Not quite. They actually write this script, but in a rougher style. I've actually seen an original from the Rambam in this script. It was Arabic, he wrote, but we use these letters. It's very similar. It's not this at all. It's this. The tzadi isn't anything like this tzadi. You remember the tzadi in the Rashi? It's the one that caused you all the difficulty. You mixed it up with the lamed. You used to mix it up with the lamed. You see, things like that, that isn't it. The mem and the final minim and the samach, they don't have that. It's a different script. They use a different script. But this is
Are you suggesting that this is the exact Sav that was in the Torah written in?
No. This one here?
Yeah.
No. The Torah is written in a different Sav.
I don't understand what the problem is. As far as George's question goes. Can I tell you, George?
You know.
yes.
Apparently, there's you want to say there has to be Rashi trying to differentiate between the Gemara itself and...
Yes, and the Gemara differentiates between itself and the Torah.
But that's just a pragmatic question, though, right?
I don't understand what pragmatic means.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a poor word, but... It seems to me a formal problem, just a question of differentiation between the two different... things that are being said. You need to make a demarcation between the Gemara and the Rashi. So there's one way of doing that is to use different scripts.
No, it's not necessary to do that at all. I don't have to make differentiations. Look, there are many Sephardim that are written, I don't have to make any differentiations. Then why is there a difference?
We see it all the time. We see it in the Shulchan Aruch, for example, the exact same thing happening.
Yes, sir.
Where the Mechaber will be written in block print.
Yes.
And all the, off-roading will be written.
But why did they do that? Was it taken out smaller print? Have you ever seen it in an English book?
What, a Gemara?
No, whatever it is. But also with lots of different things and notes and all that.
I've never seen a page construction like this in English.
Of course not. So there's no reason. For example, Steinsaltz has published a Gemara.
Right.
Now, it's all the same print he uses. I don't think he uses the Rashi script, does he?
He does, yeah.
For what does he use it?
He uses the Rashi script for the Rashi.
And for the Tosfos?
He uses block print.
And for his own?
Block.
So why does he make the differentiation?
So he does make a differentiation, because his is smaller.
So Rashi makes small, but you create a new alphabet for that. That I've never heard of. At least I've heard of it, but in this. You follow?
I don't think I'm following him. I mean, I tend to think that it makes a lot more sense to say that it's just because they have to make a demarcation.
And it doesn't work like that.
The demarcation can be made if they're writing it small.
That's all.
Yeah, but so this is the style of script, though. I don't, you know.
But why did they create a new script for it? Why create a new script for it? Make it smaller. Already.
Look, I haven't looked into the matter, so it's a bit flippant for me to say anything, but I do remember hearing one thing very vaguely, that this was the type of script that people used to write, and as they do today, write like, you know, that, for hand printing. You know, because this was
very cumbersome. So why print it in the type of script that they write it in?
Because in Italy, in Vilna, when they printed the Gemara, that's what they, you know, that's how it came about.
Just doesn't make sense.
But the praying the Gemara was very haphazard at the beginning. I mean,
haphazard.
A goy was the first printer of the Gemara.
The goy was so particular that his was the prototype for afterwards. He was so particular, he wouldn't do anything without guidance. Wouldn't do anything without guidance, that guy. Bomberger wouldn't do anything without guidance. It was so carefully done. Allebei heimgesucht. You know what that means?
I presume it's like, if only we would do it, it's a piece of caramel.
Would it only be like that today? So with such care, it was a prototype of commodities that. Oh, no. Everything very carefully, everything done. You understand? A cousin of mine wrote a work on the Schiffschmeiteter. Schiffschmeiteter, 250 years ago. Says a Choshen. Of name Louis Schiffschmeiteter. Heard of him. He wrote a work on it. And then it's turned out to be a very outstanding piece of work. Today it's considered to be the authoritative work on the Schiffschmeiteter. And when he wrote it, he was a young man when he wrote it. When he wrote it, he sent to the Tel Jerov, he sent to Reb Shimon Shkop, and he sent to Reb Boruch Be'er copies of various parts from it, and asked them whether they would peruse it, and if they are satisfied, whether they would write so that he could ask commas. What do they call those commas in English? Not quite. Sort of a saying that they are satisfied.
Endorsements.
You see, these were the great ones. So each one of those wrote back and praised the work and how pleased they were with it and everything. Reb Boruch Be'er wrote back as follows. Now, Reb Boruch Be'er was the Talmid Mubok. Stuart, you know what a Talmid Mubok is?
No, I don't.
We must ask. No disgrace in not knowing. The only disgrace is not wanting to know. But in knowing, there isn't any disgrace. In not knowing. Do you know what a Talmid is?
Well, yes.
A disciple. A Talmid Mubok means he was the disciple. He was the disciple.
What
so,
are
we pardon?
Mubok is what?
Mubok is Hebrew. Yes. It means the definitive cycle, a disciple. What is it? Are we pardon? Of Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker was the greatest Rosh Yeshiva of this century. He died in about 1918, 1919, I might be a year or out. Two out there. I think it was 1919 that he died. He was the greatest Rosh Hashiva. Chofetz Chaim wasn't a Rosh Hashiva. No, he had a yeshiva, but he wasn't a Rosh Hashiva. That wasn't his life. He wasn't a Rav, and he wasn't a Rosh Hashiva. He was a Posek. He was a Bar Musa. But he wasn't a Rosh Hashiva. He wasn't a... Never, he didn't give him shiurim. He had other Rosh Hashivas. He had a yeshiva. And he supported the yeshiva. He supported the yeshiva from his writings. He supported the yeshiva, but he had another Rosh Hashiva. To say that he really had a Rosh Hashiva. He had many. He had now, for a long time, he had Rebbe Naftali Trop. That was his Rosh Hashiva. Naftali Trop was the one who was the great Rosh Hashiva there. You follow? But the greatest Rosh Hashiva of this century was Reb Chaim Brisker. His Talmid Mubok, that is, he is the disciple of Reb Shimon of Reb Chaim was Reb Boruch Be'er, and Reb Boruch Be'er wrote a letter. I saw the original still, and he praised it, and he says he's just got one more rav mark to make, and these were the exact words that he wrote. Now this was before the war. These were the exact words that he wrote. He said, it says in the Torah, you must love your next one as yourself. So it's an obligation I have to love you as myself. Therefore, I must tell you that the only thing I have to say about your work in a critical nature is you've written the work that Shiv Schmeitzer is on top, and my cousin wrote the commentary underneath it. He said it, Ho yiti b'himit yar mis yorei l'karev l'kodesh kodoshi. I would have been afraid to come so close to the Holy of Holies. He says, he suggested to me it should have done at the back. Should have done it at the back. I would have, the Holy of Holies, I would have feared to come so close to the Holy of Holies. Beautiful way of putting it. And immediately my cousin, who is very light on writing, immediately he wrote back to him. He said that he accepts it. And he would certainly have done it. It's in print. He can't do anything about it. It was really in print. Well, that is, I mean, we don't do that sort of thing. Rebbe Simcha wrote on the Gemara, and there was a talk that they should print it on the page. He wouldn't hear of it. That he put it on the same page. Chaim Brisker was the greatest Rosh Hashiva. It's possible that Reb Meir Simcha was the greatest Lamden. On the same page. Well, what it is, do you understand that, Rob? We don't do that sort of thing. Now, I know that this is a question of great sensitivity. There comes a time when this is lost. Doesn't mean anything. Reb Meir Feinstein, if you get Gemaras with Reb Meir Feinstein on the side. So what, you think Reb Meir Feinstein doesn't know? Of course he knew it. And I understand Reb Meir Feinstein quite right. It's a simpler way, it helps to understand. Perhaps it'll help a little bit to give further understanding of it. Got another thing on the side here, something simpler that you can get to it, perhaps be on the side. Say so allows it, but that's all. Otherwise, I mean, for Rashi to have done this so close, whether Rashi did the script or it was done after Rashi's time, I don't know. And the taste was the same thing. That we wouldn't do. I mean, that's the whole spirit of it. You know, you're thinking, where does it say in medical books that we mustn't take prussic acid?
It's a pretty good analogy.
So it is. Of course it is. I'm doing it just as an illustration.
I think it's a good analogy.
That's the nearest that I can get for it. I found that the Maral Prague in the net in Tiferes Yisrael. He wrote a many number of it. That I found on that particular thing that I told you about the script. That is the. But he doesn't make a big deal about it. It's in the study of it. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Yes.
George, what is prussic acid?
Something you shouldn't drink.
Yeah.
It's poison. What the point he was making is that it's so obvious you don't need to write it down.
Right.
You don't write that down, you see. I mean, it's just not done.
But you suggested something by saying that you don't know how Rashi and Tosfos had arranged their commentaries. Okay, so presumably they were in girsas of pamphlets or something like that, because, I mean, it was one assumption I always had, because Tosfos always tends to call Rashi Kuntras. The Kuntras, right.
Okay. Yes, but you mustn't be misled.
Okay, so we won't take that literally.
You mustn't be misled by
okay,
that.
Okay, fine.
Yes.
But very likely, they weren't. You probably had the Gemara, and then you also had the commentaries, because Rashi obviously wasn't the first.
Yes,
you know.
Possible.
Okay.
Yes.
So you had these collections of commentaries.
Yes.
And so when the printers came, when they came down to printing it in the 15th century, I forget the date exactly.
Yes.
They had to deal with this issue, though. You know, it wasn't like there's a Masor from Sinai how the Gemara page was going to look.
That
you know,
was
when they came down to the issues of having to print a page.
Yes.
They came down to what's going to be the mice of how are we going to put it together.
Yes, but the Derech Eretz came from Sinai.
Granted.
The Derech Eretz. You know.
Granted, but I'm just saying.
That when I studied, we would never put a note into the Gemara.
But Rabbi Nissen, for example, can very often be found in block prints outside.
Right. Rabbi Nissen was a Gaon. He could. Rashi was a Rishon. Rabbi Nissen was a Gaon. He could. Rabbi Nechanane also. They were Gaelic. They could. Yeah, you've got those for sweet. You've got. They were Gaelic. They were Gaelic. They were the Gaelic.